Welcome to Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. I hope everyone is enjoying the nice weather today and can get out and play after the congregational meeting today. My name is Patty Walker. I'm this morning's board rep from the church. We have a variety of announcements about church life and activities. Please read the announcements listed in your order of service. Be sure and take your order of service home to read them. The menu for the future discussion group will meet today at 11:45 in Classroom 1. A reminder that there will be a congregational meeting immediately following the service today about our solar project. All members are encouraged to attend. Please remain in the sanctuary right after the service. I invite you to greet those sitting around you. If you are visiting us today, we particularly welcome you. Please sign the guest ledger in the visitor's table in the foyer. There is a variety of information available on that table about our church and Unitarian Universalism. Help yourself to any that interests you. I will be in the social hall after the congregational meeting. If you have any questions about our church, or if you've been visiting for a while and would like information about becoming a member, I'd be happy to talk to you about that as well. If you are visiting with your children, it is our custom for the children to remain until after the offertory, at which time they go to the religious education classes. Your child is welcome to join them or remain in the service. If you'd like to go along to observe your child's class, please do so. The nursery is just out the doors to my right and across the entryway if there is a need for child care during the service. Classes will end at 11:15, at which time you can pick your children up from their classes. We always enjoy getting to know our guests. If any members have brought guests today, we would be pleased if you would introduce them. If any guests have brought themselves and feel comfortable introducing themselves, this would be a good time to do so. We'd really enjoy meeting you. Everyone is invited to gather in the social hall after the service or after the congregational meeting. Please put your cell phone on silence mode during the service. I hope you find this morning's service inspiring. Our speaker today is Andrew Kerr. His wife, Jennifer, their children, and their children own and operate Green Spirit Farm, an organic, community-supported agriculture near Dodgeville, Wisconsin. Andrew is also a part-time speaker of Free Congregation of Sauk County.
Well, thank you all for having me here this morning. And my opening words are from a poem that I wrote. It goes like this. Ah, winter, time of silence, time of sleep, of 7 Sundays every week. While chill continues and darkness slows, snowflakes dance outside the boughs of beech and oak. And so away from wood stove, and with cloak, we tiptoe out to or into snow and ice and catch with tongues put out once, twice, thrice, secrets strange and distant, feelings vague, insistent.
As we light our chalice this morning, please join in the sung congregational response in the order of service. Now is the time for our story for all ages, and if the children of all ages would like to gather around here, Andrew will tell the story to you.
I'm supposed to sit here, right?
That's a good place. Oh, does this help to have this microphone?
Yeah.
Okay, that's fine. Well, I want to again thank you all for having me here. It's really a pleasure to meet all of you. And I have a question for you before I start, and that's how many of you like to go sledding? Yeah, I like to go sledding too. Well, good, you're going to love this story because this is all about sledding. And I'll bet this is a sledding adventure that maybe hasn't happened to you, but we'll see. So anyway, it's a story that takes place in the Laura Ingalls Wilder book, Little House on the Prairie. How many of you have read that one? I love those books. I read them all the time. You can read them at any point in your life. And what happens is it's Sunday, and Laura, it's the 19th century, and in the 19th century, the way Christians celebrated Sunday is they had to kind of sit still all day and sort of do nothing, except maybe they went to church. And Laura was only about 4 or 5 years old, and she was in a little log cabin in the middle of winter about this time of year in Wisconsin. It was cold. And it was really hard to sit still all day and do nothing in the little cabin in the wintertime, right? And so she kind of didn't do that, even though she was supposed to. And so she kind of got in trouble with her dad. But her dad was a good man, and the way he helped is he said, you know, Laura, let me tell you a story. Let me tell you a story about the old days. And so he told a story about his grandfather. So that would have been Laura's great-grandfather. And here's what happened. And it was also Sunday, so his grandfather, Laura's great-grandfather, was a little boy, and it was another Sunday in Wisconsin in the 19th century. But Sundays were even more strict in those days, because not only did you have to sit still all day in the house and do nothing, there was actually one thing that you had to do, but what it was is you had to memorize passages from the Bible, and your dad would test you on them and make sure you memorized them. So you had to sit still on a bench, and your father would be sitting there. He was very stern, I guess, this great-grandfather's father, and he was reading Bible passages all day, and you just had to kind of sit there and listen and try to memorize them. Well, one cold Sunday morning in Wisconsin, when this was happening, turns out that the stern old father, the old man, he had a hard time with Sundays, too, and he actually fell asleep while he was reading the Bible to his terrified three sons who were sitting on the bench. And they saw him fall asleep, and they kind of looked at each other. And they remembered that they had just built a sled. They had built it themselves. And they had finished building it right as the sun had set on Saturday night. And then, of course, they couldn't use it anymore because the way the Sundays were celebrated in those days is they lasted from Saturday night to Sunday night. And you couldn't do any work on Sunday, so they couldn't go sledding. And they knew they wouldn't be able to go sledding for a whole week because once Monday morning came, they'd have to work for their father all day, cutting and splitting wood. And they'd have to wait a whole week before they got to use their sled. So they kind of looked at their dad, who was sitting there asleep. And they said, they thought about the sled, and they said, oh, maybe we can just quietly tiptoe outside. And so they did. So while their father was asleep, their stern old father was asleep, they tiptoed outside.
the great-grandfather and his two brothers. And they walked down to the barn, and they got the sled, and they trudged up the big, big, big hill, and they got on the sled, and they went down the sled in the snow. And it was that new wonderful snow that falls this time of year that we might get, the next couple of days. And the sled was going really fast and fast and fast down the hill. But they couldn't shout, right? You know how you like to shout and scream and yell, when you're going down a sled? Well, they couldn't do that, because if they did that, they'd wake up their dad. So it's kind of hard, just being really quiet on the sled. But it was so much fun to go down the hill, right? And they're going down. And they figure that they'll just go all the way down to the bottom of the hill, which goes right past their house, and they'll put the sled away, they'll tiptoe back in the house, and their father will never know that they ever did it, right? And it was a great plan, and it would have worked, except for one problem. And that's that as they were going down the hill as fast as they could, a pig happened to leave the forest and decide to sit right in the middle of the hill where they were sledding down. Because back in the old days, farmers didn't pen in their animals. They let them wander around in the woods. So this pig shows up, and the sled slams right into this big pig. And so now there's three silent boys on the pig, or on the sled, and there's one pig on the sled. And the pig doesn't know that it's Sunday. So the pig's not being very quiet on the sled. And he's squealing, or she's squealing and yelling. And they're in so much trouble now, because as they go right by the house, okay, there is the old man. He's woken up because of the pig, and he's sitting there like this. And he sees his three boys go down the sled, right, with a pig in the middle of the sled. Now, you'd think the guy might laugh if he saw something like that, but he didn't. He was not very happy with them. And they went down to the bottom of the hill with the pig, and the pig jumped off, and they put the sled away, and they went back in the house, and nothing happened because it was Sunday, and no work could be done on Sundays. But according to the story, when the sun set Sunday night, we'll just say that that stern old father sort of reasserted his authority on the situation. So if you ever go sledding, watch out for pigs, okay? And thank you all very much. It's really a pleasure to meet all of you. Okay.
Our opening hymn for this morning is hymn number 291, Die Gedanken sind frei. This hymn has a special meaning for me. It is the anthem of the Freethinkers Societies, the Freie Gemeinde, that were formed in Wisconsin back in the 1840s. Andrew is a legacy of one of the Freethinker Society. The only one that's left in Wisconsin, I think, is the one in Sauk City. My mother, my grandparents, my great-grandparents, and my great-great-grandparents were members of that Freethinker Society. Die Gedanken sind frei. The offering is a sacrament of the free church. Its gifts are freely given and freely received to support the works of this religious community. Now is a sacred time in our service where we invite you to share your joys and concerns with us, joys and concerns of a personal nature. If you have a joy or concern to share, raise your hand and an usher will bring a microphone for you. Just give your first name and your joy or concern and I'll light a candle for you. The first candle will be, as our tradition, we have a memorial candle. We have been lighting it for victims of wars and conflicts, and now we have a special candle to light, and that's for all hope that the turmoil in North Africa will be resolved peacefully.
My name is Esther. Probably shouldn't start yet. You're ready. I would like you to light a candle of sadness or concern. Jerry's first cousin's wife, and he only has two first cousins, so she seems like a sister-in-law to me, but Mary is her name, Mary Olson. She's from Minnesota, and we just got word that her cancer has returned, uterine cancer, and she had major surgery in September, and she's not going to fight it anymore. So it's sad. But
I'm Christy. If you could light a candle for my Aunt Jan, who was diagnosed with leukemia right before Christmas and is now in hospice in the last days of her life.
I'm John, and would you please light a candle of joy for my youngest son, Ryan, who just got another job that pays better. It's within biking distance from where he lives, and it's more opportunities for him. So I'm really happy for him in this difficult environment that he was able to get a different job.
My name is Christina, and I just want a candle of joy that Justin and I will be getting married here in 2 weeks.
My name is Anoush, and some of you already know this, but me and my husband Josh are expecting our first child in August, so, yeah.
A candle of concern, please. My name is Christy. My aunt also has her cancer back 3 times in 3 years. She's got 2 boys at home with my uncle, and they've lost 3 of their parents in the last year, so it's been very rough.
I'd appreciate, this is Tracy, I'd appreciate your thoughts and support. Next week, not this coming Tuesday, but a week from Tuesday, I'll be getting a cataract replaced.
I'm Sonia, and I'd like to light a candle of concern and hope for Summer and Ahmed, who are my brother's parents-in-law, and they live in Cairo.
Hi, I'm Barb, and I'd like to light a candle of concern and hope for my brother who just went through shoulder surgery.
This reading is from Robert Frost. That's his very famous poem. Stopping by the woods on a snowy evening. Whose woods these are, I think I know. His house is in the village, though. He will not see me stopping here to watch his woods fill up with snow. My little horse must think it queer to stop without a farmhouse near, between the woods and frozen lake, the darkest evening of the year. He gives his harness bells a shake to ask if there is some mistake, and the only other sounds the sweep of easy wind and downy flake. The woods are lovely, dark, and deep. But I have promises to keep and miles to go before I sleep, miles to go before I sleep. And now for a 1 minute moment of silence.
Please remain seated for a centering hymn number 21, For the Beauty of the Earth.
Our sermon this morning is entitled Winter, Freedom, and Religion, Three Meditations. And so I'll begin with winter. Now, feng shui, now that's a concept that we've all or a lot of us have heard about recently, perhaps. I hear that people will try to create the right feng shui or spiritual mood. Perhaps that's a good interpretation of that. And they'll do that in the rooms of their homes by rearranging, adding, eliminating various objects in their room or painting the room different colors, that sort of thing. And it seems a good thing to do. But for me, anyway, a finer thing would be to simply to walk out the door of one's house and into the sun and the clouds and the winds and the air, where the colors of the sky and the light, and the arrangements of the trees and the grass and the drifts of snow will overwhelm you, I think, with their evocation of emotion. The seasons are nature's feng shui, and they can be had by nearly anyone for merely the cost of throwing a coat upon your back. Now, in the winter season, it seems we often don't want to go outside. We often don't want to throw our coats on our backs. It's a bleak time. It can feel that way. The days arrive short. They're gray often. The landscape is lifeless. It's icy. That's very common. And the drifts of snow upon the cornfields, and we have those here back home, and you have them here too, they will resemble pictures I've seen of the planet Mars. I have to admit that. So it's an otherworldly time, winter can be. I've felt this alienness myself in winter, as if the cold wind had stripped away this film of green upon the world. And now, the landscape laid bare to browns and whites and ice and these stick figures of trees, Like I'm seeing reality in a way for the first time. All the green has been stripped away and I can see what lies underneath. The vast night sky. The night skies in winter always seem bigger to me. The vast night sky teeming with the lights of worlds so far away, and we keep finding more of those. The stars seem to descend close to the land in the winter time. And the cold of a winter's night seems not so different from what the cold of space might be. It's like we're getting a little closer to that outer space. I leave the warmth of my hearth stove to split dry red oak. That's one of my favorite things to do in the winter. And in the dead still air, I catch the cherry and the smoke meat aroma of the wood. It has a tremendously distinctive smell. And this bizarre scent, it's a very strange aroma, reminds me that I am glimpsing the innards of things, that I'm perceiving now in the wintertime what otherwise is always hidden from me. When else do we ever experience the inside of a tree? I'll walk our field pathways. I'm a farmer. Or I'll try to walk the field pathways anyway. Sometimes the snow gets a little deep for that. And I'll stand exhausted, hardly able to have gotten myself to the spot where I am, a spot that was once so well traveled and filled with conversation. It was filled with tractor rumble, with bird calls. But in the winter, it's lonely, it's still, it's gray. But it's here that I can feel or sense and hear the swish of the falling snow. And looking up, looking sideways, see the millions and billions of snowflakes falling gently to the ground. That's worth doing. And they're everywhere around me, everywhere, and I'll stick out my tongue and try to catch them. And I am hushed by what I have a sense that I was never meant to see. I have the sense that I'm not supposed to be here. I'm seeing things that aren't for ordinary people. But I have seen it. I am seeing it. It's like I'm seeing the stars and the galaxies themselves being born. Each snowflake is a star or a galaxy. I'm seeing the machinery of creation, as it were, right there in my snowy, hushed, old tomato field. So we see things in the wintertime, if we can go outside. We see otherworldly kinds of things. The mood of winter is this bringing to presentation of things not seen in the bustle of summery life. It's too busy in the summer, right? The machinery of creation, for example, that is a winter vision that would be a disturbance to me in my summer work. I'm too busy in the summer. We're all too busy in the summer to pay attention to the machinery of creation. We're too enamored of all of the activity of life that happens in the spring and the summer. Now, the poet Robert Frost, I think, feels winter the same way that I'm talking about. Death, right? That's what that poem is often about, and I think that's true. Death reveals itself to him in the snowy woods, right? Death and the dim presence of some vague owner of the woods, right? In whose woods death works its own machinery. The snowy woods, too, seem strange to us, right? They're a strange place to be if you ever stand in the woods in the snow, right? That's why Frost's poor horse acts the way it does, right? He gives his harness bells a shake to ask if there's some mistake. I mean, why would you ever stand in the woods like that? You're supposed to be going someplace. But yet Frost stops anyways because he's so enchanted by what he is seeing. The only other sounds the sweep of easy wind and downy flake. That's what Frost writes. For I believe that Frost sees in his kep, or he sees that eventually his kep promises and his traveled miles will someday end, and that they will end in these woods filled up in snow. And so Frost has this somewhat disturbing vision of death, briefly, because it's almost not appropriate because he's still alive. But for a moment, he sees the machinery of the cycle of birth and death. And that disturbing vision is always the gift of those who would venture away from the warm village lights, right? And step into the winter. And such a vision can bring solace. Because although our lives are snowflakes, they are finally dropping into a silent wood, right? We are like the stars in the galaxies too. We are created and we fall and then someday we stop. And it's a silent wood that we drop into. But the woods are lovely, dark, and deep. So the second meditation is freedom. Now, a walk in the winter woods is not a gay affair. A Frost poem isn't gay either. It's not a very happy poem. It's a peaceful poem, but happiness and peace are different things. I can feel a bit frightening to be in the winter woods. There is almost an overbearing silence in the winter woods, and this silence can evoke a feeling of emptiness. We humans, we're a social species. We don't embrace emptiness very, very readily. And when emptiness does confront us, we are apt to fill it with something. That's the way we are. We, of course, are free to fill this emptiness with whatever we want. But I find that this act of filling, okay, in myself anyway, is almost always an autobiographical process. It's almost compulsively autobiographical. Now, I grew up in a Navy family, and so I moved every few years. And because of that, I never had the chance to form really close friendships when I was young. Friendships that I know some people have that last for years and years and years, and I never had a chance to do that. That's something I have to accept in my life. And so during my winter walks into the gray woods, okay, where the silence can lay heavy sometimes and the mist that sometimes is out there, I imagine companionship. I imagine intimate companionship, a companionship which I cannot escape, right? No matter how much moving around I'm going to do, that companionship will always be with me. And yet, if it's going to be a companionship that's always going to be with me, it's going to be a strange kind of companionship and a kind of inhuman kind of companionship because there would have to be a certain omniscience to it. And I admit, I often wonder if God is the creation of lonely children or lonely people, and it's the refuge of those who are unnaturally isolated. I don't know the answer to that, but I wonder that about myself anyway. And to walk in the winter woods is to place a mirror before your own soul, right? That's what solitude does. It makes us look at ourselves. And the chill, the sparse quiet of winter becomes that place of self-knowledge. So again, we see things that ordinarily we're too busy to see. And so in Wisconsin, the snowy grove of the bur oak becomes our bow tree, right? Now, Robert Frost, of course, he's been to this bow tree too, right? He's been to this place, discovering his mortality in the sweep of snowflake, but also discovering that for now, he may leave the snowy woods. He may choose the village. He makes a choice. He may choose the village and ignore the mystic persuasion of the snowy woods. They evoke him. He wants to stay there. They seduce him, but he leaves anyways. And he leaves because he says, I have promises to keep and miles to go before I sleep. And so the loves of our lives pull us too, right? Our commitments. They pull us away from winter walks. We walk the winter paths, but one eye always keeps in view the warm firelight, which leaves our windows and settles gently upon the new snow, right? It's like a doorway back home, sort of waiting patiently, right? With calm vigilance, calling us away from the swells of snowflakes and kind of back to our porch. That's why it's so wonderful in the winter that the light leaves the window. It's almost like a pathway back to the house, a pathway back to our commitments, our loves. We're not supposed to stay out there yet. So winter agitates us then. It agitates us with the choice between this mystic snowy woods with its vision of the way creation works. And then there's the warm village wood stove, the wood stove of our own home. Now, Sartre once wrote that humanity is condemned to be free. We have to choose whether we want to or not. But here in Wisconsin, we have winter to tell us this. Winter will tell us that, I think. Now, in the springtime, of course, it's obvious what to do, right? It's time to grow and grow and plant and plant and work and work and do. There isn't any time to choose. It's just time to move. And things are slow in winter. Nothing moves but our own slow shuffle in the deep snow. So time makes us look at the act of choosing. That's what winter does. It makes us look at our freedom. There is nothing like standing alone in some snowy field, deciding whether to keep walking or to return home, right? To lay bare the mechanics of choice. So when I'm doing that, I stand there and I grow cold. That's always interesting, though. As cold as you get, you don't want to leave. And Frost stands there too, right? To the agitation of his horse. Now, how does Frost choose to move on to the village? And why do I stand there, snowflakes melting on my nose, so cold that even the dog leaves me for the house? Sometimes I've stood there so long the dog leaves. Now, choice or freedom is not some creatio ex nihilo. We are condemned to be free, that's true, condemned to choose, but we don't choose out of nothing. Okay, we choose for reasons. And to stand in the wintry presence of choice is to stand with whatever lightly taps our shivering shoulders and says, it is more beautiful to make this choice rather than another. Now, Frost, in his poem, stands before both the woods, which are lovely, dark, and deep, and his promises to keep. How does he leave the woods? How does he perceive the greater beauty of his promises rather than just staying and seeing the beauty of creation at work? But beauty is not some intellectual exercise. The haunting colors of birch bark upon snow against the steel blue of a January evening. We do not decide that the birch grove upon evening light is beautiful. I don't think we make a choice about that. No, the very birch grove upon evening itself, the very event of it, it possesses us. It is beautiful, and it takes us. We are made to feel this way. The winter landscape itself creates what we are in that moment. Robert Frost's poem again. Where is his own initiative in that poem? There isn't any. He actually doesn't appear to have any of his own initiative, although he does make a choice. There just seems to be him sitting there, taken by the winter moment, telling us what it is. And Frost's poem, for me, expresses the winter message that before freedom, before choice, we are chosen, we are created, and we are the product of a landscape, the product of a world. And that brings me to the last meditation, which is religion. Now, it's discomforting, these winter discoveries. The self-knowledge brought by our winter wanderings, by my winter wanderings, reveals how created we are, how much we are the product of wood and wind and fire and food and other people. Winter is the season for the solitary walk because the stillness, the silence, the silver birch bark upon the gray-tinted snow disclose that there is no real solitude. We are created by things every moment. To feel alone is not to feel like you are the only thing. To feel alone is to feel the formative presence of what lies beneath the curtain of ordinary life. And that's what winter does. It reveals that to us. Now, Whitehead, my favorite philosopher, once wrote that religion is what a man does with his solitude. And I say, religion is what a person does on a winter walk. What a person does with those vague felt presences that create us and that erupt in front of us in the wintertime. And no other season can make that eruption happen. Now, our story for all ages takes us into the past, and it shows another way of being religious, right? That old, stern Christianity. I suppose some people might attain moral or spiritual insight by sitting so rigidly all day. I suppose they might, I don't know, reading the same book over and over again and maintaining the appearance of meditative peace, okay, while, at least for their children, right? The twin shadows of force and authority haunt the house. And that's an unfortunate common combination, religion and authority. Woe be to those children, right, who would profane authority in the name of play, right? That's something that I hear echoed in that story. And yet, I warrant from our meditations that religion is the profaning of authority. That's what our UU and my free thought tradition teaches us. That there is an alternative to authority, and religion is the alternative to authority. There can be self-knowledge only when we open ourselves up to it, only when we explore. We do have to leave the house and choose to walk in those snowy woods. We have to go out there and find it for ourselves. We are responsible for our own meaning, for discovering our own meaning. One thing I like so much about our story for all ages is the courage that those three children showed. It was a very courageous thing for them to do, to defy so forceful an authority just to play for a moment in the winter snow. And I warrant that we all must be like that. There's a message there. We should all be that way if we want to have our own religion rather than have it stuffed down our throats by some authority figure. We have to walk out of the house. We have to walk out of our office. We have to walk out of our church, frankly, and walk among the free congregation of wood and wind and snow and sky. Now, these brave children, and that's how I see them, they were brave, they were courageous, they teach me how to finish my haunted winter walks. They play. That's what they do. Now, why can't I do that? Why don't I play as much as I do? Now, I accept that I will not rush out to play right away as they do. I'm not a kid. I'm a grown-up. And it is the burden of adulthood to perceive consciously the machinery of creation, to see it there, and to stand there in the snowy field with the million snowflakes and see that creation at work and say yes to it or no to it. We have that responsibility as adults. Children aren't there yet. They don't have that yet. And I want to accept it. I want to accept that machinery. If the vague presences which haunt my winter walks create me, what else am I to do but accept it? It's a part of me anyways. So I think I should also play, though. If I play and go sledding, then I will trudge hard in the deep snow and feel that deep snow so much that I will be the deep snow, right? Because I'll fall into it off of the sled. And I will race down that hill so fast that the cold wind will shock me. And the cold wind will take me up, all of me, right? You'll feel that cold wind so much that it will be who you are for a moment. If I play in the snow and the wind and the cold and the wood, then I will be filled to overflowing with the snow and the wind and the cold and the wood. And I will, for those playful moments, fully know what it is that creates me. I think in the end, religion is always about play. Play, I think, is the most religious thing that we can ever do, because we open ourselves up to the whole world, and that's how we discover and explore our own meaning in life. Our religion is what, in my opinion, is what we fill ourselves up with when we play. The sun, the snow, the rain, the waves, children, God, lovers, soil, whatever it may be. It could be many, many different things. And so I'm very glad for winter. When I think about it and feel it, let myself feel it, I'm very glad for winter, for the slowness, for the grayness, for the coldness of it, which slows me down and cools me down and gives me a chance to see my own religion. And I thank you very much. It's an honor to be here.
Normally we request people rise for the hymns, but in light of Andrew's talk, you can rise if you want to or sit if you prefer. Hymn number 101, Abide With Me. Now we have time for what Andrew told me before the service started was probably the most important part of our service, which we call the polylogue. So let's take about 10 minutes or so in light of the timing that we have with the congregational meeting afterwards. And if you have any thoughts to share, raise your hand and usher will bring a microphone and Andrew will be happy to respond to your comments.
Going out to Lapham Peak and playing in the snow and the trees in the forest, and it was just very, very appropriate. And I've been spending a lot of time in a warm climate in the winter this year, but it is really a treasure to be, to see the winter and go and experience it. And you painted it in a way I've never thought of it before about creation and death, and so it's quite appealing.
I'm John. As you were speaking about authority and religion and freedom, it made me think of the people in Egypt, and as they reject the authority of their rule, of their so-called president, I wonder and hope they're not leaving the authority of that to an authority of religion if the religion ends up being a new authority, and that they could have their freedom without a new authority.
I agree with that, though. I don't know what will happen to Egypt, except that they're leaving the authority of the present government, but to some extent, I believe very strongly, they're leaving the authority of the wider international system that's had Egypt always play a certain role. Mubarak has been an ally, we'll see.
I'm Mary. I wish I could talk about Egypt, but I'm going to go back to the Wisconsin winter. In the wintertime, I love winter. I always have, and I go to work every day and listen to everyone complain about the cold and how much they hate shoveling and how much they hate having to walk in the winter. And it just makes me sad because such a big chunk of our time here is snowbound. And I was out at Lapham this morning skiing, and it just is such a major part of my life to have this quiet time. So I appreciate you celebrating that, because I hear it so rarely.
It's a consequence of, I have a chance as a farmer to live a lifestyle that our society is largely left behind. It's a very seasonal society, a very seasonal lifestyle. As our culture has become so much more enamored of wealth creation, and there are advantages to doing that, of course. We've given ourselves less space to be spiritual and to be religious, I think. And that's the downside to the 24-hour economy, as opposed to the seasonal economy.
Hi, I'm Bo. As a recreation therapist for 28 years working with at-risk youth, I have a quote in my office by Plato. It says, you can discover more about a person in an hour of play than in a year of conversation.
You know, I've heard many quotes of Plato, but that one I don't know. I really appreciate you giving it to me. I think play is a fundamental religious idea. All animals play. All children play. And I believe that they play because they're learning to trust the world. That's what play is about. It's about learning to trust the world, not because the world is a positive place all the time, because it's not. And the kids who play often cry at the end of the game. They learn to suffer in their play, too. But it's a chance to learn, nevertheless, that overall there's a goodness in the world that makes it worth getting up in the morning and continuing to live in it in an engaged way. And play teaches us that. It teaches all animals. So I'm glad to hear the Plato sentiment. Thank you very much.
Well, this is Tom here. I'm over here. Over here. Here. Well, why I was there is a long story that I'm not going to take the time for, but I spent about 2 hours yesterday on the Lake Michigan shore in Sheboygan alone out, you know, in the winter, and just walking the shoreline. And I called my parents both grew up in Sheboygan, so I called my mom and told her where I was. And she told me about how when her and my dad were young and, you know, what parts of the lake shore were used for necking. And then she reassured me that her and my dad hadn't done that. They'd gone to this other spot. But so I went there, you know. And it's unlike Lake Michigan in the summer. It's totally different. There's blocks of ice there the size of my house right now. And it was an amazing experience. I reflected on the power of time, events which took place there without which I would not exist, right? And that is the foundation of my religion. It truly is. Thank you.
It's about surrender, because it's our natural tendency to want to stay safe and warm and cozy in our home. And you have to make that leap to get your coat on and go out there. And but it's a very strong call to answer.
Hi, I'm Jackie. I dislike winter immensely, but I've lived in Wisconsin most of my life, and I did grow to cherish it through the eyes of Monet as he studied winter and cherished it immensely and looked at all the purples and blues and violets and pinks that you see during the winter that you cannot see in the landscape during the summer. And so for that reason, I cope.
Before Andrew gives his closing words, right after the service, I'm going to repeat Lynn's announcement. Those who are voting members of the congregation, if you please stay in the sanctuary for what's hopefully a quick vote on the some changes to the contract for the solar installation, which we're hoping to have done on our property this spring. But if you're not a voting member, please, and Andrew, please join us for coffee and conversation in the social hall right after the service. We've got organic, fairly traded coffee there and other treats. And those who are not members, please join in for conversation with Andrew. And if the vote hopefully goes quickly, the rest of us can join soon thereafter.
My closing words are from a poem I wrote entitled Snowflakes. Watch with me the snowflakes fall, and don't go far, but stand beside me in my warmth, and I in yours too. Now, what are these bodies anyways but beginnings? Watch the snowflakes, me and you, while they fill the world and always filling worlds, while we think about how worlds might be and how might worlds be. You can't be scared always wanting your life if you really want to feel snowflakes. If you want to for no good reason, just leave it all and stroll right out the door. My, how the obligations will stare into the swirl of snow and stand inside, just stand inside the body of everything. But if you do this, you will be fearless. There will be no space at all. The whole universe is snowflakes falling, so much motion that space hasn't got any room at all, and hides and books, hoping the snow won't smear the ink or wet the dry, neat pages we've published to secure our loves all alone. But aloneness just isn't anything at all. It just isn't anything at all. There are snowflakes, and you stand in them, and they pelt your face. You have eyes. Let them open. But close your eyes, and they will pelt you anyway. The ice will hurt your open eyes, and it will always hurt them. While the snowflakes falling so persistently, embracing the swells of land and dry grass, and you two standing, hearing togetherness at work, and what choice? What choice do we have? Will you choose no snowflakes in the everywhereness of them? So much snowflakes that standing still with eyes shut, you can stick out your tongue and taste them.
Solar installation that won't produce much electricity in the winter.
No.
We produce far more than we use in the summer, and then we consume it in the winter.